Welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, brought to you by TournamentPokerEdge.com, the only podcast dedicated exclusively to poker tournament strategy. Now here's your host, Clayton Fletcher.
Hello once again, everybody, and welcome to the Tournament Poker Edge podcast, sponsored by ACR, America's Card Room, where this coming Sunday, we do have yet another in our ongoing free roll series. That's right, a $1,000 free roll tournament open only to the first 300 players. And you can get details of this tournament by joining the TPE Discord, which, like this tournament, is absolutely free. There's a link in the description to this podcast episode where you can join the TPE Discord and talk about the upcoming free roll on ACR this Sunday, and also share your thoughts on the podcast on various poker strategies and other topics, as we used to say back in the 2+2 days. My name is Clayton Fletcher, and I am in New York City, getting ready for a trip to the Turning Stone Casino and Resort Hotel and Spa up in beautiful, what is it, Seneca Falls, New York, someplace up there. It's the first time they've ever had a WSOP circuit event in my state, so I'm going to take a little trip, trying to get as much live poker in as humanly possible in these weeks and months, getting ready for the World Series of Poker this summer. In summer poker news, the Venetian Casino Resort Hotel and Spa, all suites, I should say, Venetian All Suites Casino Hotel Resort and Spa in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, has released a schedule of their own for the upcoming summer deep stack extravaganza, or whatever they're calling their poker festival these days. I can't keep track with all the different names and all the different moves. One move that I like that the Venetian is making this summer is reduced rake for early registration. So I love this energy. I want to know how many people are coming to play in a tournament. I want more poker rooms to incentivize players showing up on time. You know, years and years ago, the good players didn't want any variance in the game, so they talked all the casinos into making the levels endless and make the blinds up, move up really, really slowly. And as a result, a lot of players feel like they don't have to play the first 8 levels of a tournament anymore. So I think that getting a little something for being on time is a step in the right direction. So kudos to you, Venetian Poker. Now, some of you might realize that although it is not yet spring, I'm already thinking about the summer, and that is just what happens to me from the minute that WSOP schedule comes out. I am so excited for the summer. The World Series of Poker is going to be so great this year. The very first weekend, I'm performing with Jim Jeffries at the Mirage, and I just can't wait to get out there. Here's the plan, guys. I'm going to arrive in Vegas on May 31st, and then on June 1st, I'm going to play the Million Bounty, the first major tournament weekend. I'm going to fire one bullet and bag the chip lead, and then not have to worry about that again until Sunday, because Friday and Saturday, I'm just going to be a comedian. I'm going to prep for my shows with Jim at the Mirage, and then on Sunday, I'm going to return to my number one stack in the Million Bounty tournament, and I'm going to bust somebody and collect the $1 million bounty prize, then make the final table and win the guaranteed $1 million first place prize, and just start off with a bang and have the best summer ever. So I don't see what could possibly go wrong with this plan. I can't wait. I'm studying hard. I'm working. I'm right on pace for all the goals that I set for myself this year in poker, and I'm very excited, as I'm sure many of you are as well, for summer camp in Vegas. With that in mind, today I want to review a few hands that were played on day 1D of the 2022 World Series of Poker main event. Now, this has become kind of an annual tradition. In the weeks and months leading up to the World Series of Poker, I like to talk about last year's WSOP. I feel like it helps me get in the right mindset, imagine myself in similar situations in this year's main event. And just as I've done in the past, I'm only going to share one player's hand for each of these hand histories, and you guys can play along as we go. So the first hand I want to get to is from the 300, 500, 500 level. Again, it's day 1D of the 2022 main event. This is one of their five featured tables. I believe it was the main featured table, which featured David Chino Ream, as well as Melanie Wisner, sitting right directly next to each other. So those are two very well-known players. I have experience with both of them. Chino, he seems to have gotten his life together. Years ago, when he was, in some sort of spiral, I had the unfortunate privilege of playing with him in a tournament where he literally didn't shut up the whole time. He was bullying other players. He was really just, you know, being quite obnoxious. I understand he was having some other types of problems, maybe with this substance or that substance. By all accounts, from what I understand, it seems that he's moved on from that chapter of his life. He is much more pleasant to be around now. He is still a very outgoing guy, obviously, but I think that, you know, given maybe perhaps the fact that he found the right girl and reprioritized his life, he seems to be just doing better generally. And then Melanie Wisner and I worked for a company called the World College Poker, or just World College Poker, not the World College Poker. We did some commentary for them. She's also affiliated with Poker Power, which is an organization that helps promote poker to female players, which I am a big fan of. As many of you know, I've kind of taken it upon myself to get involved in the fight to draw more women into the game that we all know and love. So I've worked with Melanie. I really like her. She's got a great personality. Also, a background in the theater, which makes her near and dear to my heart, obviously. So these two are about to get after it in this hand. So the action begins with Chino in second position. We're going to play this hand from the standpoint of Chino Ream. So putting ourselves in his shoes, one fold. And now here I am in second position, or as some of you may call it, UTG plus one, and he's got a stack of 115,000, which is good for the chip lead at this day 1D table. And he's got the nine of clubs, six of clubs. Okay, so guys, I don't really know what the justification for playing this hand could possibly be. Even if I thought I found myself at a table filled with fish cakes and just absolute donkeys, I still don't think it's profitable to play the suited two gapper from early position. I think this is a very obvious fold. But, you know, Chino, he's not a big folder. He gets in there and he opens to 1,200. So 2.4 big blinds. And Melanie, on his immediate left in third position, calls with 55K. behind. Now remember, this is the main event. You start off with 60,000 in tournament units. So the average at this point in the tournament is probably not even 70,000 yet. It is a very slow structure. We're not going to tell you just yet what Melanie called with, but let's think about how you might range her in Chino's shoes. You're opening from under the gun plus one. So when she calls, I would think she's not fooling around. Ask yourself this question: what is the worst hand that you think Melanie would call with or should call with in this spot? Now, yeah, she's got a nice stack. I mean, everyone has a nice stack in the main event. She's got over 100 times the big blind, despite having lost a few chips already during the day. It's just the slowest, deepest tournament in the world. So you can lose a few pots, you can lose some chips, and still have over 100 times the big blind halfway through day one. So, but with that in mind, what do you think is the worst hand Melanie Wisner would have in this situation? She calls, and then the action folds all the way around to the big blind, who is a recreational player, a senior by the name of Robert Firestone. So three to the flop. Oh, Firestone has 99K in his stack. So with 4,400 in the middle, the flop comes ace of hearts, six of hearts, six of spades. Hero, Chino Ream, holding the nine of clubs, six of clubs for three of a kind. Gotta love that. Firestone checks and Ream puts in a bet of 1,900. So just under half the pot. What do we think of this bet? What do we think of this sizing? One thing is he shouldn't really have a six very often unless he has four of them. A lot of pre-flop charts would have us folding our ace six suited from second position, as well as most of our suited connectors that might include a six. Many pre-flop charts that I've seen also have us folding pocket sixes under the gun. So with all of that in mind, GTO or whatever other strategy you're trying to follow would probably make it pretty hard to put me on a six here after I've raised from second position. So Chino has to be loving this. And for that reason, guys, I think he should actually bet a little bit bigger. You know, it's the main event. Everyone's very, very deep. You're going to get action from flush draws. You're going to get action from ace X types of hands. And I think that a lot of Melanie's calling range should include ace queen, ace jack, suited or not. And also with the big blind having come along, he could also very easily have an ace or a flush draw. So I would bet bigger here. I think it's pretty easy to default and say, oh, I'm, you know, when I see bet flops, no matter what I have, I like to go a little less than half the pot or around a third of the pot or whatever. But I do think we can mix it up. In Chino's shoes, this deep, I would like to be able to bet bigger when I have an ace, when I have a flush draw, and obviously on the rare occasion when I flop the world with 9-6 suited on ace 6-6. So yeah, for that reason, I'm not crazy about Ream's bet sizing here. He puts in 1,900 into the 4,400 pot, and then Melanie Wisner makes the call, and Firestone folds, leaving the two pros heads up to the turn. So with 8,200 in the middle, the turn comes the jack of hearts, so our board is now ace of hearts, six of spades, jack of hearts. So three hearts on the board, and Ream now decides to check. I mean, what do we think of this play? The ace of hearts is on the board. So how many flushes do we really think Wisner will have, right? I mean, I suppose she could have a hand like king, queen of hearts, possibly, or maybe king, 10 of hearts. Are those hands in the range for calling from third position with all these players yet to act behind me? Probably she shouldn't really have king 10 suited at all in her early position calling range, but who knows? Technically speaking, it is easy to justify a lot of pre-flop strategies when you are 100, 200, or 300 big blinds deep. So I guess maybe it's not impossible for Wisner to have a flush. But yeah, certainly I don't think she should have a lot of suited connectors. Those hands don't really play well from early position. And she's got the worst relative position to the immediate left of the original preflop raiser. And she's good enough to not really have much 9-8 suited or whatever in her range. She just would have thrown that away facing an open from second position by a tough pro like Chino. So I really think we can discount Melanie Wisner's flushes. And for that reason, I think that I would have bet again in Chino's shoes, again trying to get her to pay off with an ace. Now, she could have a hand like ace-queen with the queen of hearts. And there, I think she really wouldn't be in a folding mood. So for that reason, I think I would overbet this card. There's 8,200 in there. I would put in like 12 or 13,000 and expect Melanie Weisner not to fold Ace X, particularly when she has a heart. So we might as well go for that. So instead, Ream checks and Weisner checks behind. So now I really like my hand, and I'm probably kicking myself for not betting the turn. When our opponent has that ace queen with the queen of hearts, we've just given our opponent a free card to beat us when we really could have gotten value. I mean, she called on the flop with something. And for all the reasons I already named, I don't think she has a flush very often. So, yeah, I think we missed a bet here on this turn. And now on the river, with still 8,200 in the middle, a disastrous ace of spades shows up. So, final board of ace of hearts, six of hearts, six of spades, jack of hearts, ace of spades. So, now we have the bottom full house in this spot, and it is not pretty. So, you know, in Reem's shoes, I don't know. I mean, I guess we could put out like a little blocker bet and see if we can get Weisner to call with worse. But just what worse does she really have? I don't know. This is pretty gross. Just a terrible run out for our hand. The flush got there, and now the better full house got there as well. So, yeah, I guess maybe checking is best here. So Ream does check, and Melanie Weisner into the pot of 8,200. She now fires 3,500. And it's decision time. I mean, do we want to give Melanie Weisner an extra 3,500 in tournament units? Do we think that she would ever value bet a flush here or a worse hand than sixes full of aces? I don't know. I mean, the board is double paired. A lot of players are just happy to check a flush back. And again, with the ace of hearts on the board and the jack of hearts on the board, what flush does she have? Maybe king, queen of hearts, right? So, yeah, tough spot for Ream. Like, what is she betting? Is she just trying to take us to value town with her very obvious ace, queen, or whatever? I mean, yeah, tough spot. I don't blame Chino for throwing his hand away, but through the magic of television, as seen on Poker Go, we know that Melanie Weisner value bet, value bluffed, with the king of hearts, queen of hearts. Pretty much the only flush she'll ever have. And I'm very surprised that she bet it. And I'm pretty sure she was trying to get value from a hand like pocket kings. I don't think she was trying to get a fold from sixes full of aces, but that's exactly what she got. And nice hand, Melanie. Maybe we shouldn't have opened 9-6 suited from second position in the first place. All right, let's go to one of the other tables, also from day 1D. This is a really fun one here. It's the next level, 300, 600, 600. And remember, it's the main event. These levels last 2 hours. So we go from 300, 500 to 500 to 300, 600, 600 for 2 whole hours. In this hand, the under-the-gun player, Daniel Bunce, raises to 1,500 under the gun with 41K behind. In the low jack, a British pro by the name of Paul Ephraimson calls with the ace of clubs, tray of clubs, off a 51,000 stack. And then fold to the big blind, who is Phil Jones, an amateur who, as the commentators revealed, played in a home game, one of those home game satellites where one player gets to play in the main event and everybody else gets 50% of the action or something like that. I'm sure some of you do this when you're planning your trips to Vegas, maybe like a home game league or a weekly prize pool kitty in your home game that gets one player to the main event and maybe everybody at home gets a sweat. Phil Jones is such a player. He's got 56,000 in his stack, and he makes the call from the big blind. So three to the flop with 6,000 in the middle. The flop comes five of spades, four of spades, deuce of spades. So 5-4 deuce all spades. Hero in this hand, we are Paul Ephraimson of the United Kingdom. And we've got ace of clubs, tray of clubs for a straight, but we don't have a spade, which might be a problem. And Mr. Phil Jones, our home game winner, Donk leads 3,200 into two opponents on the monotone flop. 3,200 into 6,000, and the action is on Hero with a straight. Guys, I think it's very unlikely that we're beat here. It's not impossible. Like, if our big blind in this hand has a low flush, maybe a hand like 9-8 of spades, and just doesn't want to see another spade come off, he might be betting to try to protect a flopped flush. But other than that, I just think that the straight is going to be good the vast majority of the time. First of all, it's very hard to flop a flush. Like, when you start with two suited cards, your odds of flopping a flush are something like 112-1. But the hard part is the part that's happened, guys. We've got three spades on the board. That's the hard part. Having two in my hand isn't the hard part. It's getting the three more on the flop that is. So, I mean, it's not impossible. But in my experience, amateur players who are making a bet on the flop to protect a flopped flush, they just don't want to see any more spades, or they don't want the board to pair, they tend to bet much bigger than this. Remember, guys, he's putting 3,200 into the 6K pot with two opponents, either one of whom could have a spade. So if that's what he's doing, I think that usually he's going to do it with a little more vim and vigor, maybe like 5K or even 6K into the 6K pot. So the 3,200 just doesn't feel like that kind of bet to me. I'm not sure, of course, how Phil Jones tends to play his flopped flushes. But I think that would be unlikely for him to just bet half the pot to protect. So maybe he's got the ace high flush. But even then, I think that a lot of times these guys go for the check raise. I don't know. I'm not too scared of this bet. I think in Hero's shoes, Paul Ephraimson should just make the call here, or maybe even raise. I think raising for value has a lot of merit. Certainly, Phil Jones could be making this play with a high spade, right? He could have a hand like Ace X with the Ace of Spades, so he's got actually a straight flush draw. He could also have a semi-bluffing hand, something like 4-3, with or without the Three of Spades, where he's got middle pair and an open-ended straight draw. I mean, we can discount that just a little bit, because we do have the tray of clubs in our own hand. So yeah, I like raising here because I feel like overall, range versus range, we've got a value bet here, a value raise that can get called by much worse. He's not going to fold like 5-4 for two pair or four tray, especially if he's got the tray of spades for a pair with the open-ended straight flush draw. Show me an amateur player that can fold that hand to any raise size. I mean, come on. Don't you want to see if you get your straight flush? Look, I feel like this is a value situation. So he bets 3,200 into 6K. I would make it like 8,500. And let's try to get stacks in. I don't know. You guys probably think I'm crazy. But Clayton, what if he has a flush? I think if he's got a flush, he's playing it in a very strange and unusual way for an amateur player. And when I'm up against an amateur opponent, which this guy, Phil Jones, I think that at the table, I would have been able to read him as such. He's got kind of a golfer hat on. He looks a little uncomfortable at the table. He doesn't strike me as someone that, you know, studies GTO strategies and things like that. I think that we can raise here and try to get the chips in because I just don't put him on a flush. So yeah, instead, Mr. Ephraimson, Hero, just calls, and the original raiser, Daniel Bunce, folded a long time ago, but I kind of forgot to mention that to you guys. So here we are, heads up to the turn, and now with 12,400 in the middle, and Hero, Ephraimson, with 45,000 behind, Jones has us covered by 6,000, the turn comes the seven of clubs. So our board is now five of spades, four of spades, deuce of spades, seven of clubs. And Jones continues firing, this time exactly half the pot, 6,200 into the 12,400 pot. Now, what should we do with our wheel in this situation? I mean, I guess we have one more thing to worry about. That seven, it does complete a 6-8, but otherwise a pretty innocuous card. So in order for Jones to have us beat right now, he either flopped a flush or he's got a 6-8, just went ahead and bet half the pot into two opponents on the flop with 6-8 on 5-4 deuce. It's odd, right? I mean, he could. 6-8 is, after all, a double belly buster straight draw on the flop. So that's fine. And maybe if he's got a spade, he's like, I got a lot going on here. I'm just going to bet into two players. I don't know. I don't see amateur players, especially in the main event. You just don't see it that much. So it's a hard sell. I'm not buying this. I think I would raise. But if we do raise here, I don't think we need to go very big. And I think that we do need to consider folding if Jones decides to just shove all in over the top of that raise here on the turn. It's different on the flop because he could have all kinds of optimism about whatever draw he's got. But yeah, say we make it like 15 or 16,000 and then he shoves all in for another 30,000 on top of that. Yeah, I don't know, guys. On the turn, I feel like it's not a draw as often. Always remember this, the flop is a much better street for drawing hands than the turn is. So typically, if you're up against a novice opponent or a recreational player and they get really aggressive on the turn, they're already there. They don't semi-bluff as often as professionals do on 4th Street. So keep that in mind, especially semi-bluff re-raising. You just don't really see that, and particularly not in the main event. So if I were to raise here and get shoved on, I think folding the straight wouldn't really cost me very much sleep at all. Versus this particular opponent. Remember, this is always, like all of my strategies, player dependent. So Ephraimson does actually raise. He makes it 15,000. I really like this sizing given stacks and everything else. And I would expect to get action a lot from hands like Ace X with the Ace of Spades still sitting there with the straight flush draw, but not really wanting to get all in versus my raise. So a smallish raise, and then we can reevaluate on the river. But I think now is the best time to get action and to get value for my flopped wheel. So yeah, 15K, and Jones does just flat call. So everything is going according to plan. I really don't think the guy could have a flush very much here. I think most players holding a flush would try to get all the money in, especially now that I've shown such strength on the turn. So yeah, I like this. I'm really happy that he called, and I'm thinking my straight is probably good the vast majority of the time. And now we're going to see a river, and the pot is big. It's 42,400. Remember, guys, the big blind is 600. So we've got 70 big blinds in this pot. And Ephraimson, our hero, has only 30,000. Remember, Jones covers by 6K, so he's got 36K. So both of these players have less than a pot-sized bet remaining. And the river comes the seven of diamonds, pairing the board for a final board of five of spades, four of spades, deuce of spades, seven of clubs, seven of diamonds, and Phil Jones moves all in. What should I do with the ace tray of clubs? I mean, this was unexpected. What the heck is going on? We really can't beat anything now. We can only beat a bluff. I don't really think this player would shove with 8-6 anymore. Now that the board has paired and now that he got raised on the turn and made the call, I feel like 8-6 is no longer in his range. I think that the hands he would play this way are strong flushes, maybe like a flopped ace high flush, which again, I'm not really sure that he would have played the turn that way with that hand, or maybe a full house. Certainly a full house is possible. A hand like 7-5, pocket deuces. Those hands do make sense. It's one more thing for us to worry about. But yeah, this is a pretty gross spot for hero Paul Efremson holding the worst possible straight. Yeah, I don't know if I could call. I don't know if I should call. It's tough. What would you do? Well, Efremson does decide to fold. And guys, he got bluffed. Phil Jones went all in on the river with the ace of spades, jack of hearts, which is kind of what his flop bet felt like to me. His turn bet is very, very unusual. Half the pot with that hand, it's very strange. But, you know, one thing you know when you have the ace of spades, jack of hearts on this board, you know that your opponent doesn't have the five high straight flush. And you also know that your opponent doesn't have the ace high flush at all. That helps, you know. I think it helps Jones to make the big move with all his buddies in the home game watching back in Iowa or wherever. He puts it all in and gets the pro to lay down a straight on the seven of diamonds river. Efremson, for his part, I really can't blame him for folding. It's so hard to call off without the nuts in the main event. He's got 50 big blinds left, even after losing all those chips. So does he really have to put in 50 more bigs? I mean, in order to do so, he really has to put his opponent on the exact type of hand that he has. That'll do it for this episode. Let me know what you think of these two hands. And if you like this format where I don't tell you what everybody else has until later. By the way, in this last hand, Mr. Bunce had raised under the gun with King 10 offsuit. I know sometimes I forget to tell you what everybody had. I'm not going to make that mistake on this episode. Let me know what you guys think. Use the Discord. You can tell me in the podcast channel of the TPE Discord or the strategy. Strategy works as well. Just get on that Discord. Click the link in the description of this podcast and join the TPE Discord. Also, we also have a link in the description where you can join America's Card Room and get a 100% first-time deposit bonus up to $2,000. Oh my goodness. Using the promo code TPE. So, for everyone here at Tournament Poker Edge, and with special thanks, as always, to our generous sponsors, America's Card Room, I'm Clayton Fletcher. Thank you so much for listening.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Fold them, let them hit me, raise it, baby, stay with me. Luck and intuition, play the cards with babes to start. And after she's been hooked, I'll play the one that's on her heart. Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa. I'll get her heart, show her what I got. Oh, whoa. Gambling is fun when you're with me.
I love it.
Russian roulette is not the same without a gun. And baby, when it's love, if it's not rough, it isn't fun, fun.
Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa.
I'll get a heart, show her what I got.
Oh, whoa, whoa, oh, whoa, whoa.
I'll get a heart, show her what I got.
Love nobody.